Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and sometimes twice daily podcast. We're live at Labour conference this morning on the roof of the Brighton Centre, which sounds far more glamorous than it actually is.
And we think there is less wind here than on the beach yesterday, for those who are worried about the audio quality.
Though that wouldn't be difficult, to be fair. It was very windy last night. I'm John Connolly, and I'm joined today by Isabel Hardman and Katie Balls. Labour has been consumed by many fights this week over several things, but today's shaping up to the biggest of all. Isabel, what are we expecting on the Brexit front today?
Well, we've got a vote this afternoon on Labour's Brexit position in a referendum. So the party's now committed to having another referendum, but what it hasn't decided on is how it's going to campaign. This has led it to basically chase its own tail in interviews in a very awkward way with Emily Thornberry, Richard Bergen and so on, saying that they would negotiate a new deal and then they'd campaign against it and vote to remain, which doesn't make any sense at all. And so the party's allegedly trying to resolve this, although Jeremy Corbyn's position is that he would be neutral and would let other people decide, which is an interesting definition of leadership. There's a statement from the NEC, which was produced yesterday, which is that the decision on Labour's position should be taken at a one-day conference after the next general election, i.e. we don't want to think about it now, so let's vote on putting it off. Then there's another unambiguously pro-Remain motion, which is going to be debated. And then a third one, which was described, I think, by Paul Brand of ITV as another ambiguous delegate motion. So that will be fun. And that those are votes that are happening this afternoon after Emily Thornberry, the Shadow Foreign Secretary's speech to conference. And Katie was at a fringe with her yesterday, where she was not backing down from her position that the party needs to campaign for Remain.
I think when it comes to where these votes could go, you have a situation where it does seem as though several motions could pass, which would then be contradicting Brexit policies, which might not seem to many people as that different than what we currently have as a Labour Brexit position. But it is a strange scenario to be in, especially if you think back to last year's Labour conference, where it was a very, very late night. But between them all, they agreed to some kind of fudge of a singular motion, which was then passed on the conference floor. And that was with the work of Keir Starmer, but also liaising with Corbyn's office. And I do think the fact that you have various different motions today being voted on is just a sign of how there is something about this conference which to me feels as though Team Corbyn is loosening its grip, and the fact that you aren't able to get people to back down on various issues, or even the private school motion that passed yesterday, so to abolish private schools. Now, John McDonnell is someone who has been quite pro the movement to ban Eton, but I think even by McDonnell's standards, the motion that passed was actually more radical than some Corbynists had hoped for, this idea of relinquishing property. And again, it just feels as though the members, perhaps it's because they don't think things are permanent, or just because they think they can push it beyond what the leadership is saying, are able to try different things. As for what's going to happen with these Brexit votes, obviously we never like to predict things too close to the event, but speaking to various figures, it's going to come down quite heavily to what the unions think on this. And if you look at the delegate floor, it's weighted in favour of the unions. You have Len McCluskey, I was on the radio of him last night, and he's very clear that he supports the policy of Jeremy Corbyn. He has made the point now, I think, three times in the space of 24 hours, that he thought people like Emily Thornberry, who, when I sat at that fringe, were definitely not on message with Jeremy Corbyn's Brexit plan, suggested they should thrash out the policy at this conference, not at a future conference, as Jeremy Corbyn wants, should basically either sign up to what Jeremy Corbyn is saying or quit the cabinet.
It's a very Boris Johnson position, isn't it, really?
Yeah. But Len McCluskey would perhaps be more of an enforcer than Jeremy Corbyn, because you've had him say, if these people are still going to do that, they should move. But there doesn't really seem to be any sense of this level of discipline. It's almost as though people are being allowed to have these different views, and some would say it's positive in terms of it being a broad church, but I do think it means that you don't have this cohesive message.
And Isabel, do you think this pressure for the party to back an unambiguously Remain position, is that mainly coming from the grassroots, do you think, or is it more people possibly thinking about the next leader after Corbyn?
It's a mix of things. It's come partly from the membership, who are generally pretty pro Remain. There's also an anxiety amongst MPs, even those actually in Leave voting constituencies, that the ambiguity it's just not going to work. How on earth are they going to go into an election and campaign on a "we'll decide later" on Brexit platform? You know, that's just not going to work in today's political landscape. And as Katie says, there is a sense of instability around Jeremy Corbyn as well. It's something that his opponents have obviously been working very hard for. So Tom Watson, for instance, this is all part of the Tom Watson plan, is that it becomes more and more likely that Jeremy Corbyn steps down rather than that somebody moves against him. But what's changed over the past few weeks, I think, and certainly something we've seen at conferences, is that people who aren't the angry anti-Corbyn plotters are now starting to talk about what life will be like after the Labour leader. And that's a real shift, because, you know, we've, over the past few years, we've grown used to Labour members being slavishly devoted to Jeremy Corbyn. And now even his slightly bizarre outriders on Twitter have been saying that he, you know, failed in his leadership over the weekend when there was the attempt against Tom Watson. So there's something afoot.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the fights to come, obviously we had the Brexit vote today. We have the private school motion yesterday, which I think took some members of the shadow cabinet by surprise. But one of the other fights that seems to be brewing, if you look at where the membership are, the grassroots compared to the leadership and the unions, is what they're going to do on their environmental policy. So you have the carbon emissions target, and there is a sense that they need to set a date by which they want to be carbon net zero. And lots of activists want it to be 2030, but several of the unions don't want to do that because they think that what that would do to their industries, to jobs, is something which they cannot afford to do and would be negative both for the Labour Party and the country. But lots of people who are normally slavishly loyal to Jeremy Corbyn on social media, on the airwaves, it's one of those stands where they do seem to be saying, we need to get this. Now, that won't be voted on until tomorrow, I don't think, but again, I think that is another interesting one, because lots of this younger membership that Corbyn is credited for bringing over, you think back a few years now to that Glastonbury moment, are very committed to the environment, and I do think they will see it as a big fudge if they go for a year much closer to the Tory or the Lib Dem target.
And Isabel, what is the mood like here at a sort of conference today? Do you think members are happy with how things are going? I mean, obviously they've not been getting great headlines, but they have passed some fairly radical policies, which I guess the members would agree with.
Well, I think Labour members have an attitude towards headlines which is quite different to those who are involved in sort of media management. They will basically see any hostile headline as being a hostile headline, as opposed to something that is naturally going to come out of an attempt to remove the deputy leader and a massive row over the party's Brexit policy, which is the central issue of the day. They'll just see that as the right-wing press going for Jeremy, and, you know, we've announced all these great policies, why don't you talk about policy? They'll say, but there is a sort of febrile atmosphere here, I think. I think people are, they're not really sure what's going on. There's not that sense of determined confidence that there has been in previous years. A lot of members do want a shift in the Brexit policy. And I think also there's a lot of instability on other issues as well. Don't forget that anti-Semitism is still a massive problem in the party. Rosie Duffield, one of the MPs who was elected in 2017, turned up at a fringe last night, and she said that she was going to get into trouble with her local party for coming to this fringe, because it was about anti-Semitism and about supporting Jewish Labour members. She said, but she didn't care anymore. And so there is this, I think some MPs in particular have sort of slightly given up on caring about what the mood of the membership is, because they feel that they've annoyed their members just by doing what is right.
Yeah, and I think walking around this conference, I think it's been a trend over the previous years, but even fewer Labour MPs than I think last conference in terms of Labour MPs who aren't perhaps deemed Corbynistas. It definitely, and those who have come up, who I would say are not necessarily at odds, but they're not completely on page with the membership of when you bump into, say, we're only here for a day, yeah, then we're clearing off.
And you notice that some of them, I mean, Lisa Nandy seems to be doing every single fringe going, because there aren't any other MPs around, basically. I'm not entirely sure how she's going to manage it. She's sort of broadcasting from a central location to seven fringes at once.
Yeah, you might find us talking about very similar fringe events on this podcast, but we promise it's not
the Lisa Nandy show kind of thing. Yeah. I guess, Katie, on the flip side, one person who's having a relatively good conference is Tom Watson. Is that because his expectations have been set so low, or is there a general movement to embrace him?
I would say the strangest thing about this Labour conference is that, and people laugh when I say this, and when I tweeted it, I got mocked, but there does seem to be a light level of Watson mania breaking out. And that's because wherever he goes, and I've seen him, I've had other people report this too, he's getting a hero's welcome. He's getting high-fived, he's getting clapped.
at the Progress Rally, which I don't think is representative of Labour conference as a whole, it seems very Blairite. He received a standing ovation before and after he spoke. Aisha Hazarika, who has appeared on this podcast previously, spoke after him, and using words that James Forsyth would not like me to say on this podcast, said, you know, F me. I'll never imagine the day that Tom Watson would get a standing ovation from Progress, from a Progress Rally. So I think that's been a unifier. I think those around Tom Watson are feeling very upbeat.
Yeah, this weekend has worked out so well for them.
Very well. And he's going out, you know, making jokes, having all these speeches. People have said to me they've never seen him treated so well. But he's got his big speech tomorrow on the conference floor. I don't think he was allowed a speech last year, if I remember correctly. And I think this is going to be, I understand he hasn't written it yet, but I think this is could be, the question is, does he go for the kill? Does he make lots of jokes? Or does he try strike a more serious tone about uniting the party?
John, I saw that you there's a sort of leaflet gauntlet that you have to run just to get into Labour conference, where for about 30 metres there are about, God, it feels like about 5,000 people. It's not quite that bad, but there's this crowd of people thrusting leaflets in your face and looking very offended if you don't take their Palestinian flag or their come to this trade union solidarity thing or whatever. You were handed a leaflet from some kind of Labour Marxist group who were going to protest at Tom Watson's
yes,
speech.
Yes, that's right. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of reception Tom Watson gets when he actually gives his speech tomorrow. I mean, it was a fascinating leaflet in that it was the only time I've ever seen Gandhi-like used as an insult about Tom Watson. supine and Gandhi-like. But yeah, also, they do have plans to protest his speech in some way. So I guess we'll see that if that comes from the floor itself, how able the Labour organisers are to keep order on the conference floor. But yeah, that'll be an interesting one to watch, I guess. Brilliant. Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.